Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Herculean Physique, we continue our exploration of mace training. Our guest tonight is Jonathan Morris, who trains with the mace. Greetings and welcome, Jonathan. How are you?
Never had it better, Hercules. Thanks for asking, man.
That is awesome. May it be so for all of us.
Absolutely. I hope so. Honestly, it's just about the thought of it. If you think that, you know, it's something that I got a couple of years ago from one of my old jobs. I was a server at a restaurant, and we had this regular that would come in all the time, and he would always say, I've never had it so good. And I really liked the mm-hmm. sentiment. You know, he says, think about how many times someone asks you in your day, how are you doing? Most people say, like, oh, I'm not bad. I'm doing okay. I'm all right. Well, for me, my thought process is kind of, you know, what you think about is what you bring about. So if you're always thinking that, oh, you're just okay, you're not bad, it kind of tends to bring around that mediocrity. You get a little bit more of that. And so I started saying, you know, I've never had it better. And even on the days where I don't really believe it 100%, I still kind of say it. And it just kind of makes me think a little bit better. Or I say, think about things a little bit better, puts me in a more positive light. And so, you know, he asks, you know, how many times a day does somebody ask you how you're doing, you know, 10, 15, 20 times. And so if you can tell yourself day after day, 20 times a day, that you've never had it better, eventually your mind starts to believe it and you bring more positive to yourself.
I believe the same thing. And so far it's amazing. Every single mace training person that I've invited on has a very positive outlook and has a very positive philosophy. But you've met more mace trainers or people in training than I have. Is that generally true of people who follow this particular path?
I think some. There are definitely, I don't know, I wouldn't say that necessarily everybody that swings a mace has that kind of that same output. I'd say I've seen more of it. Like, it's kind of hard to swing a mace and have a bad attitude about life, but I've seen a couple of people that have not had the greatest attitudes about things.
So I just looked out then, and I found you guys, and you are also busy spreading as much positivity as you can.
Yeah, you're fine. You've got in with a good group of people from what I've heard so far.
Yes, I have. So what brought you to the path of working out with the mace? Were you always interested in exercise, physical activity, combat training?
Honestly, really, no. I was not. I grew up poor in Louisiana, honestly. My family moved around a lot. And so for me, fitness wasn't something that I really thought about. I was more of a, you know, go outside, ride my bike around the city. And so I'd put like 27, 30 something miles on my bike every day, just riding around. But I never thought about actually getting into workouts and doing that. That was, I say fitness in general, I found 12 or 13 years ago. I met Greg in Las Vegas, just randomly at the grocery store. We struck up a conversation, and I was not fit or into fitness at all. I was probably 30 pounds overweight. He invited me to come and start working out with him. He had a little boot camp in Las Vegas, North Vegas, that he ran like 3 or 4 days a week. And so I just started showing up doing that. The first 30 days, I threw up more days than I did not when I would go out and work out. So just pushing hard. From there, I moved to Dallas, did a little bit of fitness, but still not as much. And then Greg actually called me about 10 years ago or so and told me that he had a job for me in Austin, working with him at a gym that he had opened up for Derek Johnson, Total Athlete. Mm-hmm. And I moved down, started working on my certified personal trainer from NASM, got into that there. But it wasn't until a few years later that we got into the mace specifically. That was probably 5 or 6 years ago. I don't remember how we got into it specifically. I know that I ended up I went to an Onnit class in Austin. There's this gym called Onnit, and they are a behemoth there. They do a lot of the unconventional training, and I went to it's a hot Onnit class. It's basically a yoga done in a heated room, and they would alternate between mace and body weight exercises. I really enjoyed kind of what they did. I had seen a 360, I think, once or twice. And then in that class, we actually, the instructor taught us kind of a little bit about the 360 and how to do it basic. And I really enjoyed it. It was something different, something that I hadn't done before. From there, I think I ordered a couple of them. I think my buddy Greg, he might have gotten one, and I ordered one, and we just started swinging. Fell in love with them. They were great for the shoulders. Great for the arms. We felt a lot better. Like, I noticed my posture correct, and then that just kind of, or my posture, my shoulders get a little bit better, and that kind of made me want to dive a little bit more into them.
Now, I've become enamored of the mace also. I injured myself, unfortunately. I got so enthusiastic. I work out usually with dumbbells and kettlebells and D weights and things like that. But I love the unusualness of the mace. So I made myself a few maces with dumbbell bars with collars and weights, different gradations. And I got some sledgehammers, and I bought a mace bell. I was susceptible to shoulder injury for a long time. And then I finally found out how to do the shoulder exercises so I can continue to work out and not get injured. But I got so enamored with the mace that I was doing shoulders and traps like every day, which is where the majority of the weight was distributed. So I pulled my muscle again. So now it's better. It's like a week later, and I'm doing with very light weights, I'm doing some exercise. But it's a fantastic feeling working out with the mace.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, who doesn't enjoy taking weight and swinging it around behind themselves? I mean, as funny as it sounds, it kind of taps into the little primal part of my brain, like primal part of your brain, and you can swing them and just have fun swinging, but then you can get into some stuff where you can really build power. What's nice, what I like about the mace bells is the construction of them. You mentioned a sledgehammer. Well, a lot of people don't think about just swinging the sledgehammer around, but then you can also swing and from that swing come out and slam down a tire or something. And so you can build that kind of strength. I like the mace bell because that nice round head makes it a little bit easier. It's not as easy to get kind of that glancing blow and kind of reel back and hit yourself with a sledgehammer as easy it is to do with that. So the mace is really nice for that. But, yeah, dude, it's fun to swing stuff everywhere, swing stuff around your head.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. And you're right. It does help you get in touch with the primal part of you, because our ancestors swung things like this all the time.
But throwing also, like, that's one of – it's just the shoulders in general. A lot of people don't utilize their shoulders through a lot of the range of motion that they're able to take through. Or I guess that it's able to utilize. A lot of people go in and, you know, you find your people doing your traditional stuff in the gym – is all kind of in front of you, to the side of you, but nothing really behind.
Right.
So to be able to stretch everything up, get yourself nice and tall, but still being able to build the strength with it, it's not something that you see a lot of in your typical gym. Like, I love, I'll bring a mace or a club to kind of the traditional gym every so often. When I go over there, I'll kind of do a workout specific to that. And every single time I bring them in, someone, at least one person, comes over and shows interest and is like, man, those are really cool. What are they? How do they work? What do you do? And it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy that aspect of it.
You're right about the sledgehammers and hitting yourself. I hit myself on the head. Fortunately, not too hard. A few of the times as I was swinging around. Now that I pulled my shoulder, though, again, it's healing. I decided until I learn the swings correctly, I'll probably start off with Indian clubs. until I learn the movements and I could do the movements intuitively. And then I'll progressively work on the weights until I'm at the 10 pounds that Rick Brown recommends to start with.
Yeah. So I'd say the Indian clubs are really fun. I like those. I have a couple of them, the smaller ones. But I don't know. I played around with them for a little bit, but then I don't know. I haven't done too much of the lighter Indian clubs. I'm really a big fan of the heavier clubs, the steel clubs or the club bells, as some people call them. Like right now I do, my big thing is TacFit. So that's kind of more of that, like that tactical fitness, but it does utilize club bell, but it also is body weight, some mace, and kettlebells. And so it's kind of an all around system. The biggest thing, I guess, that's helped me with the clubs and kind of how you said that you injured your shoulder, there's a lot of mobility that goes into it beforehand. So a lot of mobility before you get your workout, then you'll do your workout. And then, the compensation afterwards, I think, especially for me in the past, I've always been the type that I don't really like to warm up, or I'll get in and I don't know what to do to warm up. So I'll just kind of do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And then very quickly, my mind goes, all right, let's get this workout going. And it's nice to be able to just do like a quick 5-10 minute mobility warm up that gets my joints loose and limber. Uh-huh. And then what's cool, I think, about the club versus the mace, I'll use the mace, but a lot of times I'll tend to do a little bit more with the clubs just because with the implement not being as long, where am I trying to go with this? I feel like it's easier for me to warm up with a club bell than it is a mace because I can get into a little bit better position, control the club bell as I'm putting it maybe like say back behind my head, like for a 360 with a mace. You put a club bell in your hand, and now all of a sudden you're doing what's called a gamma cast or a shield cast, where it's the same basic movement, but because the tool is not so long, you're not using as much momentum to let it swing around you. You have to control the implement a little bit more so you don't go as wild into the motions. Not to say that you go wild into it, but with a mace, like, you know, you kind of, you pull to the side, the head drops, and then from there, it's all that momentum driving around you. With the club, you're more setting it behind your back, switching it around, and then pulling it back in. So really awesome tool to kind of build that basic strength and then allow you to progress in the club. The mace is a little bit faster. I've seen, I've been a fan of that.
Yeah, I found my new, like exercise, like when I discovered weight training way back in grammar school, I knew I found my home in working out. Now with the mace training and even with sledgehammers and all the other stuff I'm playing with, I found like I come to like a second home, a vacation home maybe. So I really am enjoying the things that I'm doing. Now you mentioned that you know Greg. And have you also met Puerco, and have you met Rick?
Yes, Puerco and Rick. Those are really awesome guys. I think I was listening to the Rick Brown, to Mr. Mace, man. I was listening to your interview with him. I have not had a chance to listen to the one with Puerco Fuerte, but I do want to – I'm going to check that one out as well. No, those are really awesome people. Rick, I met him a couple of years ago, Greg and I brought I think it was Rick first, and then he brought Eric Doyle with him. He runs Long Beach Kettlebell Club in Long Beach, California, and then Rick is right there next to him. He teaches the mace. So we brought Rick out initially. He taught us mace. I fell in love with it all, the whole system. sorry, a little bit my throat's a little dry right now.
That's okay.
So Rick came down and taught his system in particular, but then Eric does kettlebell, Bulgarian bag, club bells, and mace. And so I fell in love with it, wanted to host another seminar, and about a year later we actually brought – it was Eric Doyle this time, and then Rick came along with him to help promote because they have what they call unconventional athlete, and that's kind of yeah, that's Eric's brand, his business, and he really pushes kettlebell, but also does, like, really big with the Bulgarian bag is another one. that we really like to use. But I ended up bringing both of them down here and learned, we did the whole system with all four tools, learned that over a couple of days. And then just a couple of months later, I hosted actually at our gym in Austin where we had Eric and Rick. I actually hosted an event called the Texas Mace Shootout. And it was, there's the Vintage Strength Games. Is I can't remember their name. It's been a little while. I want to say it's Valerie something or Valerie. I don't remember her name, but anyway, they have a it's kind of like a mace competition, and there's actually a couple of different competitions around the United States, and that was kind of my submission to that. We had Puerco Fuerte came out. I don't think Rick or Eric were able to make it to that one. It was more of a local kind of in the Texas area. But that was a lot of fun. And I actually had Puerco, he came out and competed at that.
Do you also compete?
I do not. I wanted to, but I just at the time I was caught up in trying to actually host the event and get things set up. And I had life going on beside me as well. But at some point I do want to compete.
Speaking about life, beyond the mace training, share your adventure. What other type of things are you into? You're a positive thinker. You're a mace trainer. You're involved in the fitness industry. What else should we learn about you?
Oh, man, gardening and real estate. I actually just got my real estate license a couple days ago, and I love to garden.
Greg is into gardening also.
Yes, sir. We both are. We bought a house here. He bought a house in Universal City. I started looking at purchasing my house. I was living in Austin, and just the housing market there was insane. So I started kind of casting my net wider and wider, found a house right down the street from him, and we both just kind of exploded. Like, he did a little bit of gardening in Austin, and I tried to do a little bit, but I didn't have my house, and so I felt like no matter what I did, it was always just temporary. And I got here and just threw everything I could into the ground.
he was telling us about a whole system of agriculture. I don't remember the name of it offhand, but he said he uses a whole system of gardening where you have like a condensed forest and everything supports everything else, and you have like a wider yield of vegetables. It's phenomenally fascinating.
Yes, sir. So it's permaculture. So the overall thing is permaculture. And it's essentially trying to model. So typically when you have a garden, most people are going to go through, they're going to till the land, they're going to set everything up in nice, neat little rows. And if you know anything about nature, if you've ever walked through the woods, the last thing that you're going to see are nice, neat little rows. So the idea behind permaculture in general is utilizing the land the way that nature intends. So you don't really go through and try to, it's disturbing the ground as little as possible somewhat. So you just kind of let nature do its deal. You can take it further and do what's called a food forest, where you are using the permaculture the tenets of permaculture and the way that it's done to heavily put food in. So most of the time people are trying to get one plant to produce a whole lot of food, and that's not what happens in nature. Typically you're going to have a lot of smaller plants. And so by, say, you take your tomatoes, and normally if you put them all in one area, well, if something happens, you lose all your tomatoes, you lose the entire crop. With the food forest, you might have a little bit of tomato here, a little bit of tomato there, and just all around you put a plant of each type here and there and everywhere. And what ends up happening is most of your plants end up being smaller, so you don't get like massive 8-foot tomatoes where you get, you know, 20 pounds of tomatoes or 30 pounds of tomatoes off of it. You might get 8 smaller plants where you only get like 3 to 5 pounds off of them. But what ends up happening, what's cool, is say a pest comes in and in one area of your yard they destroy everything. Well, if that's where all of your plants were, you've just lost it all. Now, if they're kind of stuck to that corner, you might have another corner that's still prolific and providing food for you. You don't lose all of it.
That sounds incredibly awesome. My wife is into gardening. She finds it very relaxing. And she's been growing like vegetables for us for salad or like for cooking now for a couple of years. She's also building a meditation labyrinth in her backyard, which is
that is awesome.
And so I definitely want to find out more about the horticulture. And I had told Greg that I was thinking of making a special about that. And I was going to invite him, and now I'm going to invite you. I'll have you both on sharing your secrets and your resources, because that sounds incredible.
Absolutely.
There is nothing like a garden-grown food. It's a million times better than anything you buy anywhere, even from like a county market.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I'd say it's nothing tastes as good as when it's basically still alive. I had an asparagus spear that was popping up out of the ground this last winter, and I put frost cloth down over the top of everything to try to protect it. When I set the frost cloth down, it actually snapped one of the spears off. I got kind of sad for a minute, and then I was like, well, whatever, I'll just eat this and see what it's like and see what my stuff tastes like. And oh my god, dude, like, 5 minutes ago, it was still on the plant. Like, you pull that off and take a bite of it, it is the most incredibly tasting thing you're ever going to have. I actually just picked a fig today that wasn't even ripe and still was probably the best fig I've ever eaten in my life.
Yeah, we had a fig tree in the backyard, but it died during a storm a while back. But yeah, there is nothing like taking fruit directly from the tree while it's ripe or almost ripe.
Mm-hmm.
And what
That's
other
the best
hobbies?
Way to go about it. Sorry.
What other hobbies do you have?
What other, one more time, sorry.
Hobbies.
Hobbies.
Or
what other hobbies? Honestly, man, I have a lot of little things that I enjoy, but I don't do much of them anymore, just because at the end of the day, I realize I only have a finite amount of time and I have things that I'm trying to get done. But I mean, if time was no concern and money was no concern, I'm a big fan of rock climbing. I like anything on the water. There's a spot in San Marcos, like 45 minutes away from me, that it's like a 45-minute drive. I can float the river for like 45 minutes, relax, enjoy myself, hop off the river. It's like a 10-minute walk back to the car and then drive home. And I can like go to work and do whatever I need to do after that. I'd say anything on the water, rock climbing. I like to be outside in nature and be active. That's really, I mean, everything kind of revolves around that I enjoy.
That is incredibly awesome. What would you suggest to people who want to get involved in mace training or any of the other activities that you're involved with? Like, how would you introduce them to them? Like, let's say we met in a grocery store, like you and Greg did. How would you tell me about mace training, what it's all about, and why I should be interested in it or get involved in it?
Oh, wow. Honestly, I don't even know. I just go around and talk to people here and there. I'm honestly terrible at just walking up and initiating conversation in the store, so I usually don't. If I'm at the store or something, I try to do the branding. So like I have my logo, I put on some shirts and I wear that, and I'll get a little bit of people that'll ask about the logo, say that it's cool. Or I'll wear my TacFit shirts. But usually if I am in conversation with somebody, I'll usually ask what they do. They'll ask what I do. And I mentioned TacFit and clubs. Like at the end of the day, I want people to be out of pain and be able to move well. Like, I'm 35, I'm not that old, but I'm starting to kind of feel the pains of all the dumb stuff that I did as a kid, climbing onto the roof of my house and jumping off just because I can. And so now that, you know, my joints are starting to hurt, I want to find a way to not hurt. And kind of these are the tools, you know, the mobility, the mace, the clubs, these are kind of the tools that have helped me to get past a lot of those pains. And so that's usually what I tend to focus on is, you know, how well do you move? Can you, can you run around with your kids and keep up with your kids? Or do you find yourself out of breath there? Are you going upstairs and out of breath? Like, let's just get you fit. And then 9 times out of 10, most everybody has shoulder problems. They can't move properly. Their posture is bad just because of all the years you know, we spend all of our time on cell phones and computers and everything. And so the kind of the shoulders and the chest, the upper back is an area that is painful for a lot of people. And I guess that's usually what I tend to focus on is, you know, hey, well, we can get you out of pain by doing this.
Wow, that sold me. I'm in my 60s. I'm in my 60s, and I know exactly what you mean about regretting all the things you did when you were, like, younger that you didn't really know any better, because you do pay for them later on. One way or another, you do pay for them. And now that the days before me are definitely a lot less than the days behind me, too, I've become super conscious about how I spend my time. And I also ask myself, even if I enjoy something, you know, do I really enjoy it? Is it worth spending whatever minutes, hours, weeks, years, or whatever commitment it's asking for? And if it's not something I really, really enjoy or consider important, I'll let it go at this point in my life. You know, again, there's not enough time to do everything I really want to do. So wasting it on things I don't really want to do seems like a horrible waste of time to me.
Or even things that you kind of want to do.
Yes.
Like, mm-hmm. Well, Martin Rooney said, it was a quote that that Greg actually told me from Martin Rooney. He said, we are the creators of our own misery because we put what we want right now over what we want the most.
Mm-hmm.
And so I even find that there are certain things that I really like to do, but there are other things that I like to do a lot more.
Right.
And that's where I'm kind of coming into in my life where it's like, man, well, I really like doing this and this and this, but I really love doing this right here. And so I find myself, that's why when you're like, what are your hobbies? I'm like, eat, sleep, garden, go to work. Like, I don't do anything. I'm an old man at this point.
No, you're in your 30s. You're a young man. And even though you don't initiate conversations, you're very eloquent. So you express yourself phenomenally well.
No, thank you. I'm glad one of us thinks so.
Okay. So now I asked this of, you know, Greg asked it of Parker and asked it of Rick. What does mm-hmm. the hobby of mace training or the discipline of mace training need? Rick said it needed like more exposure for people to be more aware of it. So that I can do. I now have a monthly podcast devoted to it. And you're our first mm-hmm. guest on the new title, by the way. Then Puerco had said it's not exciting, you know, if you're not the one doing it, then watching it, you know, is not very exciting. So I've been thinking about that. I've been trying to combine, like, how do you combine professional wrestling with mace training or, like, stuff like that? How can we make it more exciting? So those are the challenges that they had identified. Can you think of anything that the discipline needs that it doesn't currently have?
Oh, man. Honestly, like, as bad as this is to say it, I honestly don't know that there is a way to make it much more exciting. Like, it's one of those things that, you know how some people look at golf and they're just enamored by it no matter what, and then
right.
other people look at golf and they say, I would rather watch paint dry or my grass grow.
Uh-huh.
I feel like that's kind of something, as terrible as it is to say it, I feel like that's kind of what the mace is. It's one of those things that you either love it or you're just like, what the heck? Whatever. The competition, like if you're not up there, it's great, but you're just watching someone swing a mace for 5 minutes or 10 minutes for, you know, that short cycle or long cycle,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever's happening. It's not the most exciting thing. I mean, aside from Battle Royale, I don't really know. I don't know how you could make it a little bit more exciting. Nail maces, those are fun. And
what type of maces? I'm sorry.
So in India, they have what are called, like, basically they're the, so I think Rick mentioned it, the jewelry, the long, the big wooden clubs that are, you know, sometimes as tall as the person swinging them almost. but they have some that have been made that are embedded with nails or spikes. And so you cannot rest it on you because you're resting the nails on you. Basically, think about like laying down on a bed of nails, except those nails are coming out of your mace the whole way up and down. So you have literally your handle that you have a hold of is no nails. And then right above it, what would be your pommel, your guard, I guess, your hand guard for your sword, that starts the nails and it runs the entire length. And so, I mean, that can get exciting, but
yes,
I don't really know.
Yeah, I don't see myself going in that direction. I like the big clubs, the ones that look like you're holding tree trunks. And I'm going to make that my unofficial goal. I don't know if at this point in my life I'll ever reach the point where I'm wielding those skillfully and not clumsily, but that's like my ultimate goal. Like in bodybuilding, Lou Ferrigno kind of epitomizes the ideal of physique and Reg Park.
Yeah.
So, but I'm not going to reach there in this lifetime, but that's like the ideal. I think those jewelry, they're called, are like my deal with the mace training. I may not ever reach it, but it's something I will aspire to as I train with them. I've been trying to focus, creating the show will help raise awareness. I'm finding so far that the people I'm talking to are really fascinating. So even if swinging a mace around for like 5-10 minutes might not be exciting to watch, the people wielding the mace so far have been phenomenally interesting people, each with their own perspective, each with their own personality, each with their own interests, but they're very fascinating and positive people. And I'm interested in the different cultural variations of the mace, for instance, the Club of Hercules. In Greco-Roman mythology, it was both a clavon and a ropalon. A ropalon is a weapon or a club, and a clavos is something that you graft onto another tree to make it grow. So Hercules' club in myths, you could plant it and an olive tree would sprout. So it was like a magical club. And in a lot of the cultures throughout the world, like the Celtics had Dagda's club, which was pretty much the same. Thor had Thor's hammer, and you have all these Eastern variations as part of the mace training in Indian club. All of those have like a mythology, and the mythologies even throughout the planet tie into like thunder and lightning and things like that, which is understandable. They're big things to go boom when you hit them against something. So I can see the tie, but I'm finding that phenomenally fascinating. And I'm starting a show just on that later this month.
On the mythology of it all?
Yeah, the mythology of it all. I believe next Monday is going to be the first episode in that. And I'm looking at the staff or the wand in mythology and in esoteric studies and occultism and things like that, because it's a similar concept. They use it to focus and direct the power. Like it does in the myths. So I'm going to look at it from different cultural perspectives, like once every couple of months or so. And this way, introduce that area of interest into the discipline.
That's really cool. I'm excited to hear that and listen to it and check that out. I don't know. I haven't looked a whole lot into the mythology of it all. The main one that I know of is the Indian god Hanuman, and that was the monkey god, and he swung a big gada, and that was kind of his tool. Funny enough, there's a guy, Pake McNally. I don't remember where he's out of. He's in the U.S. He's like Tennessee, Kentucky area, somewhere around there, middle mountain area. But he has a company. He does like metal work. And so he created this this business is called Become Stronger, and he actually makes maces that are fillable. And I actually bought one from him, a little bit longer handle, 15 pounds unloaded, able to be loaded with steel BBs. But on it, on the thing, I actually had him put a little plate with a plaque that read, it was my mantra at the time, and I still use it. But is I have within me the power to create and attract all that I need and desire. And for a while, that was kind of, that was my big swing. That was my big mace to swing. And I absolutely loved that. And I felt like that was my, my conduit to the universe. Whenever I was swinging, I could speak with the universe and have my thoughts heard.
So, and it's a powerful affirmation too. If you just think of the phrase, like you were saying, if you repeat it often enough, you condition yourself to see things in a more empowered way, in a more positive way.
Absolutely.
Wow, that is awesome. So
yeah,
still...
Go ahead. I've lived, like I said, I grew up poor. I've had a lot of time in my life to focus on the things that I did not have and how my life did not go the way that I wanted, and just to constantly focus on that. And in the last decade or so, I've just learned that it's, you know, life is not what happens to you. It's how you respond to what happens
right
to you. And far too many people just let life happen to them, and that is what they see their life as. And it was something that, you know, it was a hard lesson for me to learn, but the more I focus on that, the more that it helps. And so I figure any tool that I have, if I can make it work in that fashion, make it work for me, then all the better.
I use that same tool. I also learned instead of filling my mind with concerns and worries before bed, I review all the things that are in my life that I'm really grateful for, and all the things that I already have. So I find that there's enough things right in those two categories to fill up your brain before you go to sleep. And yes, challenges still happen, you know, frequently. No life is free of its challenges, but I'm not stuck in the negative thought patterns that you know, make you feel victimized if they do happen to you.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, feeling victimized, it's not just the feeling of being victimized. It creates a mindset, and it's a spiral that's really hard to get out of, because, you know, if you're the victim of something, like, you can be a victim, but only, hang on. In being the victim, in playing the victim and removing yourself from the responsibility of it, you remove your power to fix whatever has happened. And so, you know, the mindset of, oh, it doesn't matter. Like, I mean, like, I grew up poor, and it was always, well, you know, this happened over here, and so I don't have any control over it. And this happened, and I don't have any control over. And if you do that, it becomes very hard to get ahead in your life, because you start to feel like, well, it doesn't matter what I do. I can go and work as hard as I want to, or, you know, I can do whatever, and it's not going to matter because I'm not going to succeed anyway. And then you just don't try.
Right.
And so, like, life sucks when you're a victim. And I lived, you know, 25 years of my life just always being the victim, and I never really got anything. And then when I stopped being the victim, that's when my life started picking up. And so, yeah, a lot of people don't think like that anymore, or nowadays.
Yeah, but it is very important, and it's a lesson that usually comes a little later in life, that again, no life is free of challenges. Things that are not easy happen to everybody, regardless of who they are and what their circumstances are. But if you disempower yourself, if you don't take responsibility for what's happening to you in your world, like you said, you know, you won't take the steps to fix it or change it. But if you believe that you can, then it may take a while, but you will.
Absolutely. Like, I think even, what was it? I think Greg told me one time, he's like, you know, even if someone else did do something bad to you, how did you get to the situation? It's like, you know, even if I only have 1%, if the fault is 1% mine, 99% someone else's, it is still my responsibility to not let that be the reason that I don't move forward with whatever. Like, accept my responsibility in it, accept my fault in it, and say, okay, my responsibility is now to ensure that this doesn't happen again. And so whether you remove yourself from a situation early or stop talking to someone or just whatever it is that you change, at that point you have told yourself, you've shown yourself that, okay, this is something that I can fix. It's something that I can control. And that's a pretty powerful feeling.
It is. And also I found that even if you don't know how to do something, if you see yourself doing it, if you see yourself succeeding in doing it, it will ultimately and eventually happen. I wanted at one point to have my own TV show, and everyone was telling me, oh, you haven't gone to acting school, you're not a journalist, you know, you're never going to get your own TV show. Well, within a year and a half, I had my own TV show, and I was wandering around the concrete canyons of Manhattan and other surrounding areas in New York. It was called For the Barbarian. And I was dressed like a barbarian. I had a sword strapped to my back, and I would have adventures, and I had, like, people with mini DV cams follow. It was kind of like a weird reality show. And within, like, a year and a half, I made my first movie. So I didn't know how to do these things when I started, and everyone told me I can't do it and that I'm being silly by saying that I'm going to do it. But I did it in each time without knowing how to get there, without having the necessary experience or the resources or anything. I remember when I made the movie, September 11th had happened. So the TV show kind of crashed because advertisers pulled all the revenue. So that
pulled
was
everything,
it.
Yeah.
And I got a call to cover a film festival in Lake Placid. So I had the show, they invited me to be like press. So, they asked me, how many people am I bringing up there as my crew? And I said, I'm bringing 12 people. We'll need these accommodations and we'll need transportation and all this type of stuff. So they agreed. So after that, I had to figure out how am I going to get 12 people, like, you know, camera crew and everybody else. But, you know, now the possibility was there. I got these people together. We'd never worked before. But while we were at the film festival, we made a mini movie that got shown during the film festival, and we got more newspaper space than the film festival itself. So that was it.
TV
after that. Yeah, so you don't have to know how something is going to happen. You don't have to have specific steps on a ladder to take you someplace. All you need is really a desire and then a belief that if you put it out there and just follow it where it takes you, that eventually something will happen that will make it happen, or you'll figure out a way to make it happen.
Exactly. Action. Too many people just don't do anything because they don't have that perfect plan yet, and they don't know all of the steps lined up. You have to take the first step. What do they say? A journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, even then, anything worth doing is worth doing wrong. Because if you do it wrong enough times, you're going to get it right.
Right, because that's how we learn. We learn by getting things wrong. And it's no bad judgment. Everybody learns that way. You learn by making mistakes and by trying things out again and again and again and failing until you succeed.
Yeah.
That's with everything.
Like, ignorance is not, like, too many people are afraid of ignorance. They don't want to start something because they don't want to look dumb. They don't want to look like they don't know anything. And so, I mean, even, like, picking up the mace, man, I remember when I first picked this up, I literally made a video. Greg and I recorded a video of us swinging the mace. And in the video, we're like, I don't know if I'm doing this right, but I'm going to do it anyway. But I got somebody coming down to show us how to do it. And this was, like, our promotional material for Rick coming down to teach us. We're like, well, you know what? I'd rather do it wrong for now. Cause like looking back at some of my first videos, I'm like, man, that was a terrible swing. But if I had never picked it up and done those terrible swings, I'm probably not 10,000 swings in it. You know, I probably haven't done 10,000 swings now. I haven't counted them, but I've done substantially more than I would have, or I've done substantially more than I would if I had looked at it and been like, I don't know how to swing that, so I don't want to start yet.
Yeah, a lot of people give up if they fail once or twice, and then it's like, oh, I tried it, I gave it a try, but it's no. You have to keep going and failing and just picking yourself up and dusting yourself off and trying again, and then you'll get it at some point. And some people also won't let go of something after it becomes clear that they don't really want it. And that's, I found, until I figured out that I could let go of things, if they're not working or if they turn out to be what I want them to be, it was then you get something, but you didn't want it anymore, but you feel obligated to keep it and keep it going because you've invested all this time into it already.
Yeah, it's like I've gotten this far in, I can't stop now. It's like, well, maybe everything is trying to tell you that you need to stop. You know?
Right.
I've definitely been there.
Yeah, I think we've all been there. It's like humanity has, it's like a schoolroom in a way, and there's a human condition, and as long as you're human, whatever you were before you were human and whatever you're going to be after you're human, while you're human, these are the lessons everybody learns. You know, you learn about time, you learn about success, you learn about failure, you learn about mortality, you learn about extremes, you learn about all sorts of things. And it seems from our literature that these things haven't drastically changed throughout the time, that the humanity is learning the same lessons over and over and over again. And the context or the flavor may change, but the lessons remain timeless and insoluble in some ways.
Absolutely, man. It's funny you say that. I talk about I kind of like to push buttons and stuff on Facebook, but I also do come in with like really good stuff about just like the positive mindset and thinking differently. And I find that so many people, as you try to tell them that, they're just like, oh, well, you know, that might have worked back then, but it doesn't work now. You know, times have changed. And I say, well, times have changed and it's new people, but at the end of the day, you know, as a species as a whole, we, you know, still work in groups the same way that we used to, you know, thousands of years ago. And so at the end of the day, how to work in a community and how to work in a group and be a good member of society, the basic tenets of how to do that are the same today that they were 1,000 years ago. They're the same that they were in the 20s when Stephen Covey wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. You know, these same things that, you know, the things that make someone successful are no different today than they were 100 years ago. It's just the tools, the way that we implement the habits that get you to the success are exactly the same. And so many people fail to realize that. They think that, you know, we have all these newfangled contraptions. We have a smartphone that has, you know, a computer and a camera and a phone and this, that, and everything else. And I can fit this in my pocket now. So surely, you know, how I interact with people has to change and has to be different. Well, really? No, it doesn't. People are still people.
Mm-hmm. And
we still have that.
We're in highly polarized times in some ways, and we tend to forget that, despite whatever philosophy, ideology, spiritual path you're on, people generally, regardless, want the same things. You know, there's somebody did a paper on like our political parties, and it showed that there's over 150 things that both Republicans and Democrats think are important. So, you know, why not focus on those things? There's enough things that we agree on that we don't really need to, go nuts over the things we don't agree on. And if we remain civil and converse with each other, we'll understand each other's position a little bit better. And maybe we could fix some of the 150 things. That's enough to keep us busy for another 20, 25 years.
Absolutely. Well, and I mean, I think people try to focus on too much. They try to do too much at once. You know, you can't fix 150 things at once. Let's start with one. You know, like we got so many things going on that it's, I mean, we're trying to put out so many little fires here, there, and everywhere. It's like, okay, let's focus on this one fire here, then this fire. But so many people try to lump everything together. You believe this one thing, so that means you must believe all of this. Life doesn't work like that. Ultimately, we all want to be loved. We want to be fed. You know, we want to know that we have shelter. We want to know that we have food, and we want to know that somebody cares for us. You know, how do I accomplish those three things? That's life. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'm just rambling.
Well, I am too, I guess you could look at it that way. I worked with people who are terminally ill for a while in hospital settings and institutional settings. So these were people who were in a bed and weren't leaving that bed. And if they were lucid enough to know it, you know, they had the realization that that bed was their last stop in life here on this planet. And the ones that were lucid and could communicate, I found it boiled down to like some simple things. The worst thing you could have when you're in that bed is regrets. And it's not usually, I've never heard anybody complain at the end of life about how much money they didn't earn that they should have earned or what accomplishments they had. Those were not the things that people talked about. They talked about regretting not telling somebody how they felt, not the doing things that they could have done because of displeasing someone else or because of fear. So those are regrets, and they eat at people when you're in that plane, because now you know you can't do that at all anymore. And then the best things that you can have are good memories and having people care enough about you to be there occasionally, even if it's just the hospital staff or the institutional staff, somebody come visit you or volunteer. But if at least one person cares enough about you to drop in and see how you're doing and talk to you, those are like the biggest treasures you could have at the end of life. So that changed me profoundly because, you know, now I try to live my life without regrets. I don't always succeed, but I attempt it all the time. And so I communicate how I feel. I attempt the things that I want to do. So this way I won't have those regrets at the end of life. So it is, like you said, it's very, very basic. It's very, very simple, and it's very, very human.
Yeah, very much so. Like I'm same thing. Like I've heard, I haven't worked with people that have been terminally ill, but I've heard a lot of different stories about like same thing. Like nobody talks about, you know, oh, I wish I'd worked more hours or done this or that. They always talk about, you know, like, I wish I hadn't have said that thing to that person, or I had been able to go and tell this person, you know, this truth, or just that, you know, they wanted to go and spend more time in nature or do something like that. Like, don't go, what is it? They say the wealthiest place in the world is the graveyard, because that's where all the ideas go that no one ever follows. Like, just get out, do the things that make you happy. You know, don't worry about what other people are going to think about it. You know, it takes one crazy person to start a dance movement, to start a movement. You know, one person does something, they look crazy for a little while, and then eventually someone else joins them, and then someone else, and then someone else, and the snowball effect, all of a sudden you've got a movement that just changes the world, but you have to be that crazy person willing to dance by yourself.
So you've reinforced my belief that the people who train with the mace are very philosophical and deep, because that's my experience thus far. I told Rick, and I believe I told Greg and Freco, that the fourth Saturday, not Saturday, the fourth Monday of the month is going to be the mace training show. So I'm going to invite you back if you'd like.
Of course.
I'm also planning on doing a forum occasionally on Zoom, where we could focus on specific issues. And this way everybody can express their opinions and share their knowledge and give a rounder picture of a particular aspect of mace training or again, Indian clubs and so forth. Plus there'll be the mythology show.
I am definitely interested in that. I would be very excited to come back and chat on that.
Incredibly awesome. How can people contact you and follow your mace training and the other things that you're doing?
Well, currently I am on Instagram as Unconventional Training Center, shortened from the Unconventional Training Center, and TACFIT San Antonio, TACFIT San Antonio. And I do kind of cross-post everything there.
If you can PM me on Facebook the links to these things, I'll gladly put them in with the promo so people can follow the links.
Absolutely, I will. I'll make sure to get those over to you in just a minute.
And in wrapping up today, What would you leave with people who are listening? Any thoughts, any thing we didn't cover, any comments to wrap up today?
Honestly, I don't have anything off the top of my head. I would say, honestly, just start focusing on your personal accountability, personal responsibility. Let's, you know, everybody just become the best version that you can be, become the best person that you can be. And when each member of the community becomes better, the community as a whole becomes better. And then hopefully we can all be a little bit happier in this world.
And that is a phenomenally powerful place to end today's show. Jonathan, thank you. I enjoyed speaking with you, and I look forward to speaking with you again. And I wish you great success in all your current and future endeavors.
Thank you so much, Hercules. It was a pleasure talking with you as well, my friend. I look forward to chatting with you again in the future.
Thank you, and thanks to all who tuned in. Whether you called and you're waiting patiently in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand, until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again, Jonathan.
Thank you, Hercules. Have a great night, man.
You too.